This is a recording of the Dan Klotz Conference with the Pew Charitable Trusts on June 16th, 2010 at 1:30 p.m. Central Time. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience in holding. We now have your speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of the presentation, the floor will be open for your questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you'd like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Sue Lieberman. Ms. Lieberman, you may begin, ma'am.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all of you who have called in. I am calling on a mobile phone from a town in Italy, and others are calling from mobile phones from Morocco. So if for any reason I am disconnected, others will continue until I can be reconnected. My name is Susan Lieberman. I'm Director of International Policy with the Pew Environment Group. We have on the line as well Sarah Duffy, Head of Oceans Campaign with Greenpeace, and Wendy Elliott, the Species Manager with WWF International. All three of us are the respective heads of delegation of our organizations for next week's meeting and this week's pre-meetings of the 62nd meeting of the International Whaling Commission. That is the heads of delegation of the Pew Environment Group, Greenpeace, and WWF. I'll give a very brief introduction and then turn and some background information and then turn it over to my colleagues. Basically, in summary, many of you are already familiar with the work of the International Whaling Commission. The International Whaling Commission was established under the International Convention for the Regulation of Whaling and dates to 1946. 3 years ago, the IWC began a process to try to find a negotiated solution to the impasse between the pro-whaling and whaling countries and the non-whaling pro-conservation or anti-whaling countries. There are only three countries remaining that are engaged in commercial whaling. Before the international commercial whaling moratorium of the 1980s, when tens of thousands of whales were killed, many more countries were involved in whaling. Norway and Iceland continue to go commercial whaling under an objection to the commercial whaling moratorium of the IWC. Japan continues to kill whales, particularly in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary that one of my colleagues will speak about, under an exemption to the International Convention for the Regulation of Whaling that allows governments to assign themselves quotas for scientific whaling. And one of my colleagues will talk about that. But in summary, those are the only three countries engaged in commercial whaling. The past several years before this process began 3 years ago, all of the discussions that I've been to numerous IWC meetings, that all of the discussions have been exceedingly acrimonious. But what was always clear is that Japan, Norway, and Iceland were not going to voluntarily stop whaling. What was always clear that there would never be enough pro-conservation countries to swamp Japan, Norway, Iceland, and their pro-whaling countries that vote along with them. So an effort was made to see, not to overturn the whaling moratorium, but to see if there could be some sort of negotiated solution. The 3 years of process on this are basically coming to a head at the meeting next week. The discussions are underway today and tomorrow in Morocco, in Agadir, Morocco, where the meeting is being held. And Greenpeace, WWF, and the Pew Environment Group, all three of us together issued a joint statement, which you may have and we're going to be talking about, but basically we believe that there is still a chance that governments can sit down and find a solution that will be beneficial for whale conservation into the 21st century. The constant acrimony and the continued whaling outside of the IWC, not under any international regulation whatsoever, Japan, Norway, and Iceland give themselves their own quotas, is not a good solution for whale conservation. And we believe, and certainly the Pew Environment Group does, there are many threats to whales, such as bycatch, entanglement in shipping, in fishing gear, such as climate change, sound, and a number of noise in the ocean, a number of other factors that we also believe the IWC must deal with in the 21st century. The six elements that we believe are critical. Let me first step back and say that on April 22nd, the chair and vice chair of the IWC issued a proposed consensus decision as a starting point for negotiation. It's been misrepresented by some people as saying this is the deal, either you're for or against the deal. Now, we believe that there are many elements of that proposed decision that are positive, but many elements of that proposed decision must be changed in order for it to be successful and in order for it to be something that could be, that we believe could be adopted by consensus and we believe could benefit whales. Those six elements are, first, that there be no whaling in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. My colleague from Greenpeace will be discussing that. Second, that if there is any whaling authorized, there should be no international trade whatsoever, and I'll explain that briefly in a moment. The third is that the IWC's own revised management procedure, the scientific procedure for deciding if whaling a certain quota is sustainable, that the science must be used if there are any quotas to be agreed upon. Fourth is that there should be no whaling whatsoever of threatened or endangered species. Fifth is that whaling under the exemption for scientific whaling should stop. And sixth is that if there is any consensus decision adopted next week in Morocco, it should be such that all governments agree that they won't take an objection, because a consensus means everyone agrees, and it's not going to work if everyone agrees and goes home and takes an objection and continues whaling. Now, that is a very rapid, I admit, but brief summary, but what we'll do now, I'll describe one element of the six elements, and then I'll turn it over to my colleagues, and then we'll be sure that we are certain that you'll have sufficient time to ask any questions. I want to just briefly mention the aspect of international trade. All of the great whales that are protected by the commercial whaling moratorium are listed in CITES Appendix 1. That's the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. Unfortunately, Japan, Norway, and Iceland have reservations under CITES. Basically, what the proposed decision from the chair and vice chair says, though it's bracketed, we believe should be unbracketed, what that means, it should pass, is that if any country receives a quota for whaling, they're allowed to do some whaling, it must be for domestic use in that country only, that there should be no international trade whatsoever. We believe that if Iceland receives a quota, and that's a big if, but if Iceland receives a quota, it should only be for consumption in Iceland, that there should be no decision adopted here that stimulates international trade or goes against the prohibitions already in place under the CITES Convention. And we believe that a large number of governments as well agree with that element of what we're saying is essential. I'm now going to turn it over to Sarah Duffy, the head of Oceans Campaign with Greenpeace, to discuss two other elements that we are bringing to government's attention. And then I'll wrap it up after Wendy Elliott says something, and then I'll wrap it up and open it to your questions. Sarah, I hope you're still there.
Yes, I am. Thanks, Sue. The icy waters of the Southern Ocean are home to the remaining large populations of whales that weren't decimated by the tragic history of whaling over the last centuries. Since 1994, these waters have been designated as a sanctuary, which is supposed to provide safe haven to those whale populations. Yet throughout this time, there has been whaling by the government of Japan, species of whale in the Southern Ocean. In the current proposal that has been outlined, there is not yet a clear end to whaling in the Southern Ocean. We believe that this is one of the critical elements that governments must work hard on in the coming days at this IWC meeting here in Morocco, to make sure that once and for all, the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary is upheld and vital protection is given to populations of whales in that area. So one of our critical elements that we have outlined is that there must be a phase out of all whaling in the Southern Ocean Sanctuary. Related to that point, the moratorium on commercial whaling is one of the cornerstone victories of the environmental movement. Yet almost immediately after that was agreed, the government of Japan also started pursuing a loophole to the moratorium, their so-called scientific whaling program, which is continued in the Southern Ocean. What we're calling for in our six elements is that the governments agree, by agreeing to this deal, that they will no longer do any whaling that is outside of the agreement of the deal itself. So they will suspend their scientific whaling and not whale under their own quotas and own the numbers that they allow to themselves, that all whaling would then be within the control of the International Whaling Commission, no more unilateral quotas. I'm now going to hand over to Wendy Elliott from World Wildlife Fund to continue with the other elements of the proposal.
Thank you very much, Sarah, and thank you all for joining the call. I'm going to talk first about our element that specifies the importance of no commercial whaling being conducted on threatened species. The IUCN Red List is the most comprehensive and well-respected guide to tell us whether species are doing okay or not. It ranks species as critically endangered, endangered, vulnerable. All of those brackets are classed as threatened. That means that they are in decline, or their populations have declined, and they're in an inferior conservation status. Most of the great whales that are listed as threatened by IUCN are threatened specifically because of previous whaling activities. They were driven to such low levels by previous whaling that they haven't been able to recover. Therefore, we strongly feel it's entirely inappropriate to start new commercial whaling operations on whale species that still have not recovered from previous whaling. The proposal as currently drafted sets whaling quotas for sei whales, listed as an endangered species, and fin whales, also listed as an endangered species. We believe that these two species should be removed from any whaling in this deal. The second article element I wanted to talk about was science in the deal. It was essentially a lack of recognition or a lack of taking into account the science that led previous whaling activities to drive most species to extinction. This is to near extinction. This is exactly what we need to avoid happening again. The IWC has its own mechanism for setting quotas that are precautionary and will not cause species decline. It's called the RMP. However, unfortunately, the RMP hasn't been used to calculate the quotas that are in the current deal. We strongly would urge all IWC governments to ensure that any quotas that are set in this deal are calculated using the RMP to make sure it's sustainable. Currently, we have a situation where there are numbers in the deal that's been put forward that are way higher than what the RMP would allow. The last element I was going to discuss is the use of objections in the IWC. The way the IWC convention is written, it allows member governments to lodge an official objection to any new decisions that are taken in the IWC. If a country lodges this objection, it means it's not bound by that decision. Unfortunately, this is how some countries are able to whale currently, because they lodge objections to the ban on commercial whaling that was instigated in the 1980s. It's critical that if this deal is going to succeed in its goal of bringing whaling under IWC's control, that governments commit to not using objections to exempt themselves from what is agreed in this deal. That's all from me, so I will, with that, hand over to Sue for any questions.
Thank you, and thank you very much, Wendy and Sarah, and again for all of you who called in. In conclusion, the three organizations are saying that we believe that a good deal, a good decision that comes out of Agadir would be better than the status quo. But we are saying that a bad deal is not acceptable, and we are working very hard with the governments to try to find a peace treaty for the whales so that there can be progress for whale conservation here in the 21st century. But I would say on a personal note as well, I believe that Japan holds the key, because Japan is the only country that is whaling in the Southern Ocean, the only country whaling in the sanctuary, the only country doing high seas, long distance whaling Japan holds the key. And if Japan is willing to help forge a peace treaty for whales, then there can indeed be a good decision next week in Agadir. And I now turn it over for your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, the floor is now open for your questions. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star 1 now. We'll take each question in the order that it's received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Our first question comes from Richard Black with the BBC.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. Congratulations to you, Wendy, I believe. You've had some very good news recently. Fantastic. I had a question about some of the other groups who usually you find yourself very closely allied with, who actually on this particular issue appear to be campaigning, often with celebrities, against deal at any cost. I was wondering what words you would have for organizations that are taking that stance.
Does anyone want to take that first, Sarah or Wendy, and then I may add something in addition to Richard Black's question?
Yes, I could. Yeah,
ahead,
why don't
Wendy?
You go ahead, Sue?
No, go ahead, Wendy, fine.
Yes, I think that there's a lot of discussion here on what is really best for the whales. Is a deal best for the whales? Is the status quo best for the whales? And that needs to be all of our focus. And when we discuss this with other NGOs that don't want this deal, that is the main aspect that we lead from. Unfortunately, we really believe that the status quo is not good for whales. It's not good for international marine management. It's not good for setting a precedent for broader marine conservation. And therefore, we need to find some kind of resolution.
I would agree strongly with Wendy. I think it's important that some solution be found so that any whaling is under the control of the IWC. That said, the Pew Environment Group and myself personally would rather there were no whaling. But wishing something were true doesn't make it true. And rather, if we look at it, this is a tough negotiation for some governments that have very strongly principled views. While that's true, a number of NGOs are looking at the proposal that came out from the chair and vice chair in April and saying there are things in that proposal they don't like, therefore the whole decision is bad and evil. And what we're saying is we still think there's a chance that this can be worked out. And therefore, if there's still a chance, it's not productive to just defeat this proposal. This proposal will never come to the floor for a vote. Hopefully there will be something that comes to the floor that is a modification of this proposal. So what we're still saying is there is a chance to find consensus, and if there is still a chance, then the only ethical thing for us to do is to keep trying to find that solution.
I have nothing further to add but would echo what both Wendy and Sue have said, that at this point in time, all we have is a proposal. It's open for negotiation, and it is our job to make sure we challenge governments to make the best use of this opportunity so they can actually deliver a win for the whales and take us forward in this debate. And we will continue to push as hard as we can on the six elements that we have outlined in this presentation today to make sure that government really take advantage of that opportunity and turn this proposal into something that is acceptable and a way forward for them.
Further expanding on that, I would say also to Richard Black, to your question, is that if we leave Agadir next Friday, the 25th of June, with no decision whatsoever and no progress, that is not victory, because we're not doing what the whales need is to find a solution.
Our next question comes from Frank Pope with the Times newspaper.
Hi, everyone. Thank you very much for that. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm also on a cell phone. I just really wanted to know from you all what you felt the major sticking points were going to be. Is it going to be trade, or is it going to be the Southern Ocean, or what would be the main points? If you could sort of give me the top three, if you could. Thanks.
Well, I'll answer in and see if Wendy and Sarah want to add to that. I think the Southern Ocean, whaling in the Southern Ocean is the major sticking point. And if that can be resolved, if that can be phased out, not phased down, but phased out, then I think the other sticking points will probably go by the wayside. But I think in addition, the trade issue is a big issue. It's probably a bigger issue for Iceland than any other country, though I can't speak for Iceland. But I think there are a large number of countries that feel very strongly that that has to be in there. And I would say probably the use of the RMP, the use of science. Any quotas have to be based on science, not politics. I don't know that that's a sticking point, but that will be an important issue. Wendy and Sarah, do you want to add to that to answer Frank Pope's question?
No, I fully agree with you that those three issues would be the sticking points, in particular the Southern Ocean and international trade. The science will still be a sticking point for some, however. There's a particular use of the RMP that is the best and most precautionary use of the tool, and there are some governments that don't like that use because it would establish quotas for them that they would see as being too low. But essentially, if we're going to move forward and have a deal on whaling, we must also endorse the only tool we have to make sure that whaling is scientifically sustainable. To do anything else would be irresponsible.
Our next question comes from Anne Chown with AFP.
Hello, do you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, good evening. Good afternoon, all. I just wanted to know, do you have any hint, any sign from Japan that they could overturn their attitude, that they could be ready to compromise?
I believe there are some signals from Japan that they are willing to compromise. I can't say how far they're willing to compromise. I know their fisheries minister is scheduled to come to Agadir, and there are some signals from Japan that they're still at the table and they're still talking. Whether Japan will compromise enough for this to be meaningful and will indeed feel that they have enough to gain, that they will compromise enough to phase out in the Southern Ocean. But I do want to add to that, and then my colleagues may add more. You know, the Convention on Biological Diversity will be held in Japan this October, and Japan is holding itself up as a champion of biodiversity. We saw at the CITES meeting just last March, Japan did not do anything to help marine biodiversity at all. And we're hoping, since Japan is hosting this convention on biological diversity, they'll actually show leadership at the IWC this week and next week and show willingness to compromise for the sake of whales, thereby the sake of marine biodiversity. I can't say that they will. I'm only saying I hope they will. Wendy or Sarah, if you want to add to that.
Sure, that's easy. I think until any revisions to the proposal are actually tabled here in Agadir in the coming days, it's very difficult to see exactly what cards all of the delegations will play and all of the governments will play, and that includes Japan. I think the fact that all parties have remained in these negotiations, it of course doesn't guarantee that we will have a satisfactory outcome, but the governments are committed to these negotiations, and I think we have to read that as a signal that governments are prepared to see a way forward. As Sue has outlined, whether that amounts to enough and whether that amounts to a deal that we would ultimately accept for whales is yet to be seen, but I think the fact that the governments have remained in through these tough negotiations gives us hope that we could actually see this amount to a way forward this year.
Thank you. Next question?
Our next question comes from Sunny Lewis with Environment News Services.
Hello. It sounds to me as if you all are resigned to a deal that would allow renewed commercial whaling. Do you think the current moratorium is dead? And if so, do you think that a deal would be better than what we have had since 1986?
Sarah, Wendy, do you want to go first or shall I?
I can go first. I don't think we're resigned to a deal. I would rather put it that we're trying to move forward in a way that's going to be best for whale conservation. I wouldn't say that the moratorium is dead. The moratorium has been one of the single most effective conservation achievements this century, but it's not working currently in the sense that several governments can whale completely outside the IWC's control. The only way we're going to improve that situation and actually have some level of international oversight and control of that whaling is to bring that whaling under the control of the IWC through something like this deal. But we absolutely wouldn't support any deal at any cost. If a deal is to be made, it has to be a deal that's in the best interest of the conservation of whales.
Sarah, sorry, I don't want to jump in. Sarah, do you want to add there?
I would just add that the moratorium is absolutely a cornerstone of environmental victories, but the status quo is that that is undermined every year and every season by a number of governments. The IWC has been in a state of deadlock over the last few decades and hasn't been able to move forward and resolve these issues. This process gives an opportunity for that. There is still a lot of hard work to go by a lot of governments, but the six elements that we have outlined, these actually take us a step forward in resolving those issues. In the time frame of the deal, there is still a lot of work that governments will need to do to resolve the problems in more permanent ways and to continue working together. But we do think that this deal, if it meets the clear bottom lines that we're outlining, is actually a step forward.
And I agree with what Wendy and Sarah said, and I would just add, if a consensus decision is reached that includes our six elements, then the moratorium is not dead. And even if there is a quota given to some countries, they would not be allowed in any way to trade internationally, nor could any additional countries at any time start whaling. If the moratorium were dead and the moratorium were lifted, then China and South Korea and Russia could all start whaling again. And that would not be the case with the way the decision is constructed now and the way it has to be constructed for it to be acceptable. So it's not that we're resigned to a deal. I think we're accepting the fact that some sort of decision would be preferable to the status quo.
Thank you.
Sure. Next question?
Next question comes from Arthur Max with the Associated Press.
The proposal talks about 10 years, and I'm wondering how you feel about that kind of open-ended situation where what happens after that 10 years? And while I have you on the phone, so to speak, I wonder if anybody could tell, knows what's going on with the whale population in the Gulf of Mexico, if there was one.
Does anyone want to take the 10 years, and then I can try to say what I know about the Gulf anyhow? But go ahead, Wendy or Sarah, if you want to say something about 10 years. If not, I will. But go ahead.
This isn't just a deal. What will be agreed in this deal is not simply what is in the deal text. The intention of the deal is to set consistently for the next 10 years some items of disagreement, and that will allow the IWC to address all the other items of contention during this 10-year period. So it won't be a 10 years of rest for the IWC. It will actually be a very busy 10 years for the IWC while they address issues such as small cetaceans or scientific whaling and numerous issues that have caused very fractious debate in this convention for decades. So we do hope that after this 10-year period, as many of these issues will have been resolved as possible, and we can actually move forward with a really effective body that's able to provide the protection of whales in the way that it should.
Yeah, I would add as well that we would prefer that it was shorter than 10 years, but what's proposed in the document, in the proposed decision, is a process of actually looking at some of the governance flaws of the IWC. The reason we have this loophole of scientific whaling that Japan is exploiting, the reason we have Norway and Iceland still out there whaling and look at possibly negotiating a way forward that actually changes the fundamental treaty. In terms of the Gulf of Mexico, we just to answer that question, as I recall, that there are sperm whales, but we really don't know the impact of the sperm whales or other whale species in the Gulf of Mexico. We know that we predict there will be an impact because sperm whales dive very deep. But that just points out that there are a large number of issues, a large number of conservation issues, conservation threats in the world's oceans. We need to get beyond whaling. We need to solve the whaling problem and look at oil and gas exploration. Look at bycatch. Look at other threats. We don't even know what's going on with sperm whales in the Gulf of Mexico yet, how much is being spent to solve the problem of whaling. Let's solve this problem and we can move on to all the other threats.
Sarah, do you want to?
Sorry, Sarah.
That's fine.
Next question.
Can I just add on the Gulf of Mexico spill? One of the things that the Gulf of Mexico spill has really highlighted for us is that offshore oil and gas is not currently a good idea. It's intensely obvious that once a spill happens, it's incredibly difficult to clear it up. And what we're seeing most worryingly is that in the Arctic, there are a large number of companies who are very keen to get into the Arctic for offshore drilling. In the Arctic, you don't have conditions like the Gulf of Mexico. You are not going to be able to use the operational tools that are available in the Gulf of Mexico to clean up the spill. Once the oil is out and it gets under the ice, that's it. There is no cleanup mechanism. So this really has highlighted for WWF the need for no new offshore oil and gas exploration in the Arctic until such time as appropriate spill mechanisms for cleanup have been developed.
And we all agree. In fact, we're working together in the Arctic on that. Next question?
Our next question comes from Peter Hall with The Big Money.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much for having the conference. Rolling back up to my question. It's about Australia's bid to file a case against Japan in the World Court. They, as I gather, they recently vowed to do so. And I wish to ask if that means, well, I understand that you have to operate by consensus in Agadir. If one major country vows that the Southern Sanctuary is so important that they will simply file their case in the World Court and pursue it. Does that mean that no deal whatsoever can be reached in Agadir without Australia's consent? And secondly, what do you think of the Australian case?
Sarah, do you want to take that? And I can comment on the voting and consensus issue in the IWC. Do you want to say anything about the ICJ, the International Court of Justice case?
Yeah, at this point, we are focusing our efforts on trying to achieve a deal through the International Whaling Commission approach. We think the last 3 years have provided the platform to continue those discussions, and we would urge all governments to do what they can to achieve the best possible outcome for whales through that process. The government of Australia's court case is something that we would certainly take a harder, closer look at if we don't have a successful outcome in the coming week. But we need all governments to commit to this process, to push the bottom lines, which are many of the same things that are explored through the court case, but to use this opportunity, which is right here in front of us, to push those issues and see if we can arrive at a consensus deal that includes all parties, both whaling and non-whaling, and delivers a clear way forward.
I would, Peter, in response to your question about consensus, the IWC can reach takes decisions on what are called schedule amendments to its schedule, whether it's a whaling quota or whether it's this whole proposed decision, actually based on a three-quarters majority of those voting. However, the goal here with this whole process has been to try to reach consensus. However, if there is something that all governments except one or two agree, it may be something that is put to a vote. This could be adopted by a vote. However, if the effort has been for 3 years to try to reach consensus, because if it's something adopted by three quarters plus one, then you have a large number of countries that will either be unhappy or take a reservation or to enter an objection or something like that. So it isn't that one country can block an agreement, but it's that they're trying very hard to do it by consensus. In terms of Australia's court case, I think our view is the timing isn't the best, but I think I would agree with Sarah. We need to focus on the IWC now, and we need to focus on putting an end to whaling in the Southern Ocean Sanctuary as a top priority.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Richard Black with the BBC.
Just wanted to return to this point about a consensus being necessary, which a couple of you have highlighted. You also said, Sue, that you think Japan holds the key to this. So let's say you have a scenario, I'm just suggesting this, where Japan can be tied to some sort of deal that the conservation-minded countries are happy with, but Iceland objects. You meanwhile have domestic use only. Does that not usher in a situation where Iceland effectively maintains its very, very small-scale whaling, if it takes an objection? And if so, is that a situation potentially that you could find yourself, that you could find acceptable?
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to assume that question's for me, but the others may want to answer as well. I'm not sure I want to get into all the different scenarios and possibilities, but if there is a scenario that Japan and the conservation-minded countries can reach agreement on and only Iceland disagrees, then I think in the end that probably would be preferable to the status quo. We have to see what it is, of course, but this isn't a case where Iceland can block something that might actually be acceptable to Japan, and Japan would show leadership, and the conservation-minded countries, the pro-whaling but non-whaling, but the pro-whaling countries also agree. Only Iceland disagrees. Iceland can't block the whole thing here. I think then there it would be likely that it would be put to a vote, and my view, without seeing, it's just a hypothetical, it probably would be preferable to the status quo. So I don't think that the government should be held hostage to consensus. Consensus is a laudable goal. I don't know if that answers your question or if others want to add something to that.
Certainly does, Sue.
Again, to ask a question, press star 1 now. At this time, we have no further questions.
I guess we've answered everyone's questions. In which case, we can draw this to a close, and I would like to thank all of you who called in, and I believe there is email as well to communications staff of WWF Greenpeace and the Pew Environment Group if you have any additional questions that you were not able to ask. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may disconnect at this time.